back with. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Should the Buddha, should the Dharma, should the Sangha. One of my favorite quotations from Great Master Dogen is, little sentence that many of us know by heart. When we wish to teach and enlighten other beings, we are deluded. When other beings teach and enlighten us, we are enlightened. Having quoted that, I suppose I should not say anything else, because I'm obviously wishing to teach and enlighten other people. That's a joke. But I'm going to take the risk of saying some more. Those words are easy to say. In the nitty-gritty of life, that is an incredibly difficult thing to do. I can think of two good ways in which it's a very difficult thing to do. First of all, when life is easy for us, we very easily forget to even consider that teaching. In other words, it's very easy to get complacent. Very easy to get complacent. And as soon as we get complacent, the fact that others can teach and enlighten us can just slide right out the door so easily. In some respects, one has to be much more conscious when things are moving along relatively freely and easily. Much more conscious of the importance of keeping up the bowing, the humility, the willingness to consider the validity of the views of others, to learn from the example of others. Then again, when things are very difficult, not infrequently, that difficulty has to do with others and some friction with others. Or at the very least, perhaps, just our own private inner struggle with accepting something about someone else. And then it's difficult for a more obvious reason. You know, this person really is getting to me. They bug me. Perhaps I don't very much like them. So I don't want, in those circumstances, to take this person as the Buddha who's teaching and enlightening me. And I know well in my own experience the kind of hump you have to get over, especially if in some way you feel that you've been injured by others, the kind of hump you have to get over to really open your heart to the teaching of that experience and to open your heart to see and accept that person as a Buddha for you personally. Again, I speak from a lot of experience on this, in this area. And I think that every human being has plenty of experience in this area. The fundamental reality of the Buddhahood of beings is not based on virtue, spiritual attainment, the exhibition of compassion, love, or wisdom by that person. But by the sheer fact that person has a Buddha nature, that being has a Buddha nature, after all, when we are in harmony with our Buddha nature, then it can be said that we act in an enlightened way. When we're out of harmony with our Buddha nature, it can be said that we act in an unenlightened way. In either case, the Buddha nature is there. So it becomes a question of, where do I want to put the emphasis? On the virtues and vices and or vices of another person. So that I praise what I see as virtuous. In other words, to put it bluntly, what I like in another person. And I blame what I don't like or criticize what I don't like in another person. Now I have the Buddha nature too. So is that way of doing things in harmony with my Buddha nature? Well, the Buddha nature certainly will not turn against itself. And the Buddha nature will not also view part of itself as somehow better than another part of itself. So here's a fundamentally important part of this talk. You've heard me say it before, most of you. I'll probably say it again. Regardless of what another person thinks, says, or does, I am responsible to myself for how I view that person and whether I take that person as Buddha for me or not. And I help or I hurt myself based on that view that I take and what I do subsequent to that view or consequent to that taking that view. First and foremost, what I do in my own mind. Then what I do perhaps in speech and in action, physical action. So whether or not I take another person as a Buddha for me, who teaches and enlightens me, is entirely dependent on me and not dependent at all upon them. I'll repeat that. It is entirely dependent on me, the choices I make, the attitude that I adopt. It is not dependent at all, not at all, upon that other person. We read Reverend Master's commentary on the precepts. This comes through loud and clear. There's not a word in it about what anyone else should or shouldn't do. There's not a word in it about the virtues or vices of others. It's all about her, herself, and her own relationship to the eternal. and as a part of that relationship, because all beings are of the eternal, as a part of that relationship, her own relationship to others. This is such a wonderfully simple, clean, and liberating teaching. I wonder sometimes how it has taken me decades and decades now to even get the glimmer of the way in which this liberates you. Well, I'll just speak for myself, and the way it can potentially liberate me. And sometimes, actually does. Let's put it this way. Whenever I really get this right, it's like this gust of clean, fresh air blows through. Like a little birth of spring in one's heart, one's body and mind. And that, even if it's a very, very seemingly small and subtle experience, that's an experience of the reality of things, the immaculacy. Which is the real nature of things. This teaching of Great Master Dogen and the actual experience we have when we put it into practice in the least little way at all shows that our so-called enlightenment or lack of enlightenment is ultimately in our hands, not in the hands of anyone else. And this is especially true if we're fortunate enough to run into this very teaching and be able to consciously put it into practice. This is not a teaching that is out there floating in the world very much. Nonetheless, many people put it into practice just out of their own either their own particular religious teaching in another tradition, or just their own spiritual instinct. Because our spiritual instinct runs exactly along these lines. You know, we don't have to settle for second or third best. We don't have to just tolerate those with whom we have difficulties. We don't have to just be patient with them, although both of those things are very helpful. This teaching, combined with our practice of the precepts and of meditation, shows us the way to truly transcend the opposites. So that we come to view all beings and all people, ourselves included, with equanimity, with compassion, with a sympathetic understanding. Those with whom we have the greatest difficulties are for us the greatest teachers in this respect. It's easy to get along with someone and to see the good in someone who you find it easy to get along with and who you admire. That's not asking much of oneself. But all of us come at times in our life into close association with people with whom we have great difficulties. And then we really get a test of our and our willingness to really put the precepts in our meditation into practice. There are always a few people, and even the most horrific situations, there are always a few people in the midst of very trying and even very cruel circumstances where other people are being very unkind indeed. There's always a few people who can see even those who are tormenting them with compassion. And when a person who does this dies, they leave a great legacy of spiritual merit rather than a mass of anguished jangles of confusion and judgment.